Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Oost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Romance Magazine. It's called School Girl Crush. Here's the story. My world is upside down, Talia said, her voice clogged with unshed tears. I'm juggling the job, the kids, my parents. Then, last night, Mitten devoured a box of chocolates and I had to rush him to the vet to get his stomach pumped. I swear I haven't had a decent night's sleep in months. I topped off her glass of wine and pushed a plate of oatmeal cookies closer. Although I'd never cared for Talia's cheating son-of-a-you-know-what husband, my old friend's suffering made my heart ache. You've had it rough, that's for sure, but at least things are moving in a positive direction, right? You filed the divorce papers? Wrong move. Talia's face crinkled up in pain, and big, huge drops fell from her eyes. I don't want a divorce, she said in a whisper. I want my husband back. Until he met that tramp, at least he helped out, shouldered his share of the burden. I'm telling you, I can't do it all on my own. Let me help, I offered. I could pick up the kids after school, or I could chauffeur Mitten to his vet appointments. We'd been friends forever and knew each other's secrets, each other's hopes and dreams, even each other's nightmares. Being there for Talia had become a lifelong habit. She wadded a cocktail napkin into a ball and swiped at the wetness on her cheek. There's something you can do for me. Name it. In spite of the bravado, I had my fingers crossed. Talia not only overextends herself, the schemes she commits to can be sketchy. My booth at the fall carnival. She tossed off the idea casually, as though I run carnival booths in my sleep. I don't know. I'd be more suited to carpool duty, wouldn't I? You can't leave work every day at 3:30. She had a point. What does this booth thing entail? Practically nothing, she said, beaming now. One mandatory meeting, a trip to the store for supplies, and then overseeing things on the day of the carnival. I remained immune to her enthusiasm. I don't know, Talia. Me and a bunch of unruly rugrats on sugar highs may not be the best idea you've ever had. Don't be silly. Her eyes clouded again. My booth's a tradition at the carnival, Clarice. If you don't do it, I'll have to cancel. Against my better judgment, I caved. Talia has that kind of power over me. All right, when's the first meeting? She brightened again, looking more like her old self than she had in weeks. Tomorrow night at the high school gym. You remember how to get there, don't you? Wait a minute, the high school? What was she thinking? Talia knew what kind of memories lay scattered there. You didn't say anything about the high school. I was thinking elementary school, you know, like where your kids attend. Look, you're 35 years old, Clarice. Act your age. What's the big deal? Sometimes friends take liberties with your feelings. I understand that. Still, I flinched as though she'd slapped me, especially since she was right. Okay, you win. I'll be there. I hadn't stepped foot on campus since graduation day, so as I pulled into the parking lot, I took a moment to measure the changes. Aside from taller trees and matured foliage, the place appeared just like I remembered. Mostly one-story buildings arranged in quadrangles spread across several acres. A vision of Vic Creed flashed in front of my eyes, but I deflected it to the murky part of my brain where I relegated unwanted thoughts. Just because I was all grown up and no longer an infatuated teen didn't mean I cared to revisit the most humiliating moment of my life. Instead, I focused on positive recollections, like in junior year when Talia and I kidnapped the star quarterback and held him for ransom. Or the time we camped out all night in front of the administration building to protest the lousy cafeteria food. Ah, yes, good times. Some of them, anyway. Stairs I'd climbed 100 times led to a double door glass entry. Inside, I stood for a moment in the foyer, admiring the glass trophy cabinets. Quite a few had been added in the intervening years. I followed the sound of voices onto the gym floor, surprised to discover dozens of people milling around. Who knew putting on a carnival took such a crowd? Clarice, what are you doing? What are you doing here? I recognized the old classmate, but I had trouble coming up with her name. I didn't know you had kids in the school system, she said. Here came the embarrassing part. I don't, I told the woman, frantically doing a mental search. Becky? Betsy? Roberta, she supplied cheerfully. Don't worry, I wouldn't expect you to remember me. I was a bit of a loner. So what brings you here? Favor for a friend. She poked me in the side. Payback's a hey. Hey, Vic, over here. You remember Clarice, don't you? A wave of dizziness threatened to knock me right off my feet. Vic, not the Vic, I hoped, prayed. With my heart firmly lodged in my throat, I hazarded a glance in the direction she'd hollered. Our eyes met and held for an instant before I tore mine away. Panic engulfed me and a strangling sensation in my throat left me gasping for air. Clarice, you okay? Roberta asked. Still shell-shocked, I managed a feeble head nod. Excuse me, will you? I forgot something in my car. Escape. The word pounded through my head over and over, like the refrain from a rap song. Somehow I blindly made it back to the parking lot and found my car. But for the life of me, I couldn't locate the darn keys in my purse. While I stood there frantically digging, ready to dump the whole mess on the pavement, I heard approaching footsteps. Clarice, there's no need to leave. That voice. After all this time, I'd have recognized that deep masculine timbre anywhere. I froze, my fingers curled around the keys. Too late. Well, swiveling on one heel, I managed a smile. Up close, he looked even better than he had from afar. Heaven knows I'd memorized every inch of his face back in high school, so I was able to detect the subtle differences wrought by age. His jaw, though still firm, appeared more rounded. The blue eyes still twinkled, but now a network of fine lines radiated from them. If I could have mustered up a genie with only one wish to grant, I'd have shamelessly wiped out Vic's memory of that day. But no such luck. Clearly, he hadn't forgotten. The self-conscious pity in his expression gave it away. I cleared my throat, hoping to vanquish the awkwardness. I wasn't leaving, I said. I was getting something out of my car. Relief smoothed the lines in his forehead. Oh, well, don't I feel foolish? No more than I do. What brings you to the campus? He asked. It took me a moment to remember. The carnival. I volunteered to fill in for a friend, which led me to wonder what Vic was doing here, since I knew he'd left Harrison High for storybook prep shortly after I graduated. You have a game here today? He frowned. No, Didn't you know? Sorry, how would you? I came back to Harrison about 7 years ago. I coach all the varsity teams and I teach a couple history classes. Like when I was a student, had Talia known, I'd kill her. Say, he said slowly, you're not filling in for Talia Evans, are you? Anxiety gnawed at the pit of my stomach. Yes, why? His mouth tilted with an uncertain grin. We're partners then. She told me to expect a sub, but when I asked if it would be anyone I knew, she got a little cagey. I'd kill her twice. No, better yet, I'd torture her, then kill her twice. She hardly deserved less for throwing me at the teacher who'd humiliated me in high school. The rest of the evening lumbered past in a blur. Each time my vision cleared, I'd see myself sitting knee to knee with Vic Creed and nearly bolt from the room. Perhaps sensing my distress, my so-called booth partner kept careful notes and filled out the required forms as they came around. At one point, the woman in charge passed out a contact sheet, and Vic had to ask for my address and phone number. I barely got it out without sounding like someone suffering from the croup. When the meeting was over, Vic walked me to the car, and I settled behind the wheel, anxious to race out of there. It's easy, he said. It's early, he said. Want to get a bite to eat? The question threw me for a loop. So mundane, so normal. If we were any other man and woman. But we weren't, and the knowledge made me testy. I doubt your wife would approve. He sighed, casting a glance upward as his mouth formed a grim line. When he brought his gaze back to mine, a flicker of pain crossed his face. We're divorced. She left me a long time ago. More surprising news. I'm sorry. What else could I say? Plus, to my astonishment, I spoke the truth. Even though I despised the idea of his fiancée when I learned of her way back when. Look, Clarice, you're clearly uncomfortable with all this. Maybe we should tell Talia to get someone else. Like hell, I lifted my chin. I'm not a teenager anymore. I'm not the naive young thing who fell head over heels in love with her teacher. Talia's got enough on her plate without me adding to the burden. Fair enough. So when should we get together again? Get together? I echoed dumbly. We have supplies to track down. The ping pong balls, the goldfish. Talia's has the glass bowls in her garage, but I gather we need to wash them up, and prizes, we have to buy consolation prizes. Oh, right. Apparently some of this had been covered in the meeting I hadn't listened to. I'm pretty flexible, so whenever you say. We've got a home game tomorrow afternoon, but my morning is free. Fine. We arranged to meet at Talia's, and mercifully, I drove off. It was still an early Friday night. I headed straight to Benedict Arnold's house without giving her the courtesy of a call from my cell phone. Standing at her door, I pounded so loudly I'm surprised the neighbors didn't come out to investigate the ruckus. I sensed movement inside. There was a pause as she checked the peephole. Then the door swung open and Talia stood there with her hand held up. Before you say it, hear me out. I brushed past her. How could you, Talia? You're supposed to be my best friend. I swung around, pent-up fury bringing tears to my eyes. You knew all along. How could you? After closing the door to the den where her kids were watching television, steered me into the kitchen. A bottle of wine sat on the counter next to two empty glasses, and she filled them both to the rim. This may be hard for you to understand, but I had your best interests at heart, truly. The sound that came out of my throat hovered between a laugh and a croak. You could have fooled me. I took a healthy swig of Cabernet, savoring its rich taste. Would you have gone if I told you ahead of time? Of course not. I rest my case. Frustrated, I ran a hand through my hair. Okay, wait. First, fill me in. Obviously, you're an expert on Vic Creed, and I didn't even know you were in touch with him. Have a seat, she said, indicating a bar stool, then taking one across from me. Vic and I have been running the goldfish game for years. My eyes must have popped out of my head. I never told you because, well, I knew he was a painful part of your past, and what would it have mattered? Anyway, his wife left him about 7 years ago. Apparently, it was one of those internet things. She met a guy online and took off for the other side of the country, leaving Vic to be a single parent to their daughter. Leaning my head on my hands, I groaned. How old is the daughter? Nora's 15. How incredibly sad. Talia nodded, especially because Vic's such a great guy. But then you know that. I only know him from the perspective of a 16-year-old, and a pretty stupid one at that. Not so stupid, Clarice. She reached across the counter to take my hand. There was only an 8-year age difference between you, which doesn't seem like much now, but back then, I trailed off, remembering. Back then, it was an eon, she agreed. I drained the glass of wine, and Talia poured more. Maybe it was the alcohol, but the shock of seeing Vic was wearing off, leaving in its place a sort of numbness. I remember that day better than I remember remember last week, I said finally. I remember the sound the stack of letters made when they fell out of my notebook onto the floor of his office. I remember thinking that maybe it was fate. Like he was meant to discover them. Then I remember the expression on his face as he read the first one, the second, and I stood there like a fool, so sure my declarations of love would be returned. Oh, Clarice, I sniffed a little, feeling years of embarrassment turn my cheeks pink. Of course, I was wrong, but that wasn't the worst part. The worst part was having to accompany him to the principal's office and discuss the whole mess in front of the two of them, plus my guidance counselor. I remember, Talia said softly, but he didn't have a choice. You know that. A man in his position couldn't risk the repercussions of those letters getting into the wrong hands. If only I'd written simple love letters. Instead, I'd spun elaborate stories about places we'd met, the kisses we'd shared. All fiction and intended for my eyes only, but still so damning. An immediate transfer to another teacher's class had followed. And for the rest of that year and the next, I'd felt like Hester Prynne, except the letter on my breast was invisible to all but me. And Talia, she'd known the whole story, of course. I shook my head at her, wounded to the depths of my soul. Tell me so I understand. Why did you do this? She shrugged. I thought it was time. If a psychic predicting my future had foreseen a Saturday morning hosing off fishbowls with Vic Creed, I'd have demanded a refund, and then I'd report to her the American Psychic Association, if there were such a thing. Nonetheless, there I was, meeting Vic at Talia's the next day, around 9. She showed us into the garage, pointed out the cardboard boxes, then vanished with a lame excuse about getting her nails done. Besides, knowing that Talia considers manicures pretentious, what happened to her oh-so-busy life? Gamely, I helped Vic haul the boxes into the yard, then handed him the hose. "You wash, I'll dry," I said, chuckling in spite of the tension. "That's better," he said, handing me a rag. "Excuse me? You looked so angry. I was afraid to say anything. Sorry, for what it's worth, I'm not angry at you. Not anymore. Maybe we could think of a safe topic, you know, to make the time pass. Good idea. How are the coyotes this year?" Warming to the subject, he regaled me with tales of his varsity team. "I'm so proud of how hard my guys have worked. They're really fine young men. You always were a fabulous coach. Dangerous territory, and we both knew it. Stick to the present, Clarice. Talia tells me you have a daughter. Nora, yes." His eyes, which had shone brightly while he talked about his team, grew luminescent. "She's intelligent, sweet, funny, of course. I'm totally unbiased." "Totally," I said, smiling. An odd look crossed his face. "What? Do I have dust on my nose?" No, he swallowed. "For a second there, that dimple that shows up when you smile." Somehow, I knew he wasn't referring to the present. A tingling sensation shot up my spine as we stared at each other across fish bowls. Then he muttered something I didn't catch and turned away to shut off the hose. Later, we tussled a bit over the consolation prizes, but I won out in the end. He feigned impatience as he hoisted our purchases into the back of the pickup truck. I still say we shouldn't reward people for losing. "Not people, Vic, kids. Tell me you could bear to look in those sweet little disappointed faces and send them away empty-handed. Might as well get used to real life," he muttered. I felt my jaw drop. What had happened to the positive, life-affirming Vic Creed I used to know? Sorry, didn't mean to sound bitter. Maybe I'm just more accustomed to kids getting disappointed. His daughter, I guessed, and perhaps the legions of young boys he coached over the years. I placed a hand on his arm. Don't apologize, Talia told me about your situation. He held my door open and motioned me inside. Yeah, I figured she would. So now you know what I've been doing with my life, screwing it up. Stuff happens. You can't beat yourself up about it forever. Advice from the woman who still blames me for the worst moment of her life? That's rich. Bullseye. Well, I slipped the seatbelt across my chest. He walked around the back and got in on the driver's side. Before he could start the engine, I turned sideways to face him. You're right about that day being one of the worst moments of my life, I said. But you're wrong about the rest. I stopped blaming you years ago. Stopped blaming, not stopped loving. Prove it. How? A lazy grin worked its way across his face. Come to the game today. How did I end up saying yes when my brain clearly said no? My darn heart got in the way, that's how. As every minute elapsed, I realized I'd never gotten over Vic. Oh, I'd tried. I'd even committed to long-term relationships, some with men I'd liked very much. But in the end, I'd always walked away because something was missing, and now I knew what it was. None of them were Vic. Here I was, about to make the same mistake all over again. Hadn't I learned anything? Talk about deja vu. I put off getting to the football field for so long that I ended up arriving during the third quarter, just after halftime. Walking through the turnstile brought back an eerie mix of anticipation and dread. With just the blink of an eye, part of me reverted back to the 16-year-old who lived for the opportunity to watch her heart's desire along the sidelines. The other part was the grown woman who, with perfect hindsight, knew how fruitless those longings had turned out to be. I'd like to say the more mature version of Clarice Ferguson glided to the stands with a carefree smile and took a seat. But I'd be lying. Instead, I blundered uncertainly over the uneven warm-up track to the bleachers, and then I stood behind them until I could be sure my heart wouldn't burst from my chest. 10 deep breaths later, I stepped out again amidst a thunderous cheer. Ah, touchdown, Coyotes. At the conclusion of the game, I drifted with the crowd toward the exits, but paused when I heard Vic calling my name. Congratulations, I said as he caught up to me. Thanks, he said, beaming. That makes us 3-0 for the season. Say, what's your hurry? We're going to Joe's Grill to celebrate the win, and I was hoping you'd join us. Joe's Grill, just like old times. I don't know, I demurred. Didn't I have to wash my hair or something? A young girl bounded up, her ponytail swishing from side to side. Daddy, Missy needs a ride. Can she come with us? Nora, this is an old friend of mine, Clarice Ferguson. Clarice, this is my daughter, Nora. Her bubbly smile lost some of its effervescence. Oh, nice to meet you. Before I could return the greeting, she addressed her father again. What about Missy? Of course she can ride with us. He flicked a glance at me. I'm trying to talk Miss Ferguson into coming as well. Nora bit her lip. Don't be silly, Dad. It's going to be a bunch of kids. She'd be bored. Harmless enough on the surface. But why did I get the impression she didn't want me to go? Vic pulled a face. I think your old man might manage to keep her entertained. What do you say, Clarice? Are you game for some ancient company? I suppressed a smile. Geez, when you put it like that. Excellent. You can ride with us. Then I'll bring you back to your car later. I'm sure Miss Ferguson would rather take her own car, Nora said. I was tempted to tell her I could speak for myself, but naturally I left the words unspoken. Obviously, Vic's daughter felt proprietary toward her dad, and who could blame her? She'd already lost a mother. Nora's right. I'll take my own car and meet you. Sure you remember the way? Only like the back of my hand. Another bout of conflicting emotions assaulted me as I parked beneath a neon sign advertising the best burgers and dogs in the world. How many nights had Talia and I huddled in a booth at Joe's, plotting ways for me to engage Coach Creed in conversation? Had he known even then? How mortifying. Inside, the post-game atmosphere at Joe's Grill hadn't changed much. Jocks with ravaged complexions relived highlights of the win. Flirty young girls looked on with adulation, all against the backdrop of the smell of roasted peanuts, comforting in its familiarity but spooky at the same time. When the hostess came to seat us, Nora took charge, issuing terse instructions for putting Vic and I in the booth that backed up to hers. I hid a smile at the way she ran roughshod over her dad. Over a plate of nachos and a couple sodas, Vic and I chatted amiably. He kept to safe topics, whether because of the sensitive ears nearby or because I'd made him gun-shy, I didn't know. I was too focused on the way his eyes twinkled every time I said something even slightly amusing. When he ordered a refill on the sodas, I excused myself to the bathroom. I was just finishing up in the stall when I heard Nora's now familiar giggle and Missy's throaty laugh as they entered. I considered alerting them to my presence, but hesitated too long. What if your dad finds out? Missy asked. He'd kill you if he knew. A disgusted snort. He's computer ignorant, thank goodness. He thinks I used to do research for school stuff. But what if he checks your email? That's the beauty of having a parent who isn't wired. He doesn't know I have multiple accounts. Missy uttered a sigh of envy. Wow, smart thinking. Still, you've got to be careful not to get caught. Where and when have you and Bill decided to meet? Tonight, she said, her voice rising a notch above its normal register. After my dad falls asleep, I'm going to sneak out, and Bill's going to pick me up down the block. He says he has a place where we can go, a friend's apartment or something. An apartment? Are you kidding? You're not going to do anything, are you? With a guy I'm meeting for the first time? Of course not. But we need privacy. Bill says he wants to talk about our relationship. Greasy nachos congealed in my stomach. I so didn't want to hear any more of this. I'd heard too much already. Hey, let me use some of that mascara, Missy said. When the coast was finally clear, I emerged from the stall and slowly washed my hands, dreading what I had to do. But not in front of her friends. I returned to the table, sliding into the booth opposite Vic. Behind me, the girls were too busy gossiping to have noticed my absence. Another reminder of the old adage, ignorance is bliss. I was about to send out a posse, Vic remarked dryly. Sorry, couldn't find my lipstick. The evening had turned sour, and besides, I had to find a way to get Vic alone to warn him. Although the celebratory toasts were just beginning, I begged off with a headache. Vic, the consummate gentleman, insisted he escort me to my car. I hit the remote and he opened the door, then put a hand on my shoulder. 1 second, he said. I paused, wondering what he had to say. Words weren't what he had in mind. Instead, he tipped up my chin and brushed my mouth with a brief but sensual kiss. I've waited a lot of years to do that, he whispered. Nothing could have surprised me more. Did he mean? Without giving me time to explore the confession, he kissed me again, this time lingering longer. His arms drew me close. His hand caressed a sensitive spot at the nape of my neck. Lost in sensation, I fought to regain a clear head. For the moment, I had a more important mission than fulfilling my adolescent dreams. With determination, I pulled back. He stiffened, frowning in the odd light cast by the neon sign. What's wrong? I thought you felt the same way. We have to talk about something. Okay, sure. If you need to clarify things before, it's about Nora. Nora? Oh, I see. Look, I know she's a little possessive. I groaned. Listen to me, Vic. This isn't about us. I overheard your daughter talking to Missy in the ladies' room. She's planning to sneak out of your house tonight to meet some guy she's been chatting with on the internet. Impossible. She's only allowed to use the computer for schoolwork. Men could be so dim. Well, guess what? I said, swallowing my pride. When it comes to the opposite sex, teenage girls don't always follow the rules. Nora does. I could see his jaw working. You must have misheard or misinterpreted her. She's not boy crazy. He might as well have said, like you were. I sensed his total withdrawal from me, like the day he'd walked me to the principal's office. To my surprise, the years in between didn't make the feeling any easier to take. You don't have to believe me. Just talk to her, or at least keep an eye on her tonight. Make sure she doesn't sneak out of the house. Seconds ticked by in silence. Finally, he gave my arm a friendly pat. and stood away from the door. I'll go ahead and pick up the goldfish next weekend. Then I'll meet you at the carnival. Fine. I ducked into the car, starting the engine, and backed out of the parking lot. Tears stung my eyes as I drove home. When the phone rang early the next morning, I didn't have to check the caller ID for an unfamiliar number to know it was Vic. I picked it up in the kitchen where I was having toast and orange juice for breakfast. You were right, he said without preamble. What happened? I caught her slipping out the back door around 2. Thank goodness he'd stopped her. I breathed a sigh of relief. How'd it go? Not well. We argued for several hours. She thinks she's old enough to go out with this guy. Been there, done that. The thing is, he said quickly, it's not even so much about the age, it's how she met him, or didn't. Actually, these internet chat rooms. First, or for all I know, he's a 40-year-old monster preying on innocent girls. One of those sexual predators you see on the news. What if I hadn't overheard the conversation? Did you get through to her? I hope so, but teenage girls are pretty headstrong. As if we both didn't know that already. And they think fathers are clueless. He sighed. I would curse her mother for not being in the picture, but Doreen set the precedent in the first place, didn't she? Is Nora aware of the circumstances under which her mother left? She knows the surface stuff, that her mother went to live with a man in another state. She doesn't talk about it much. My heart ached for the girl, and I wondered if the risky behavior was a subconscious effort to fill what must be an enormous emptiness inside. Has Nora ever had counseling? I honestly never found it necessary, he said after a pause. She's always been happy-go-lucky. Well adjusted. Maybe externally, I murmured, remembering the agony of my own parents' divorce, but not internally. Like me, I'd tried to fill the void by obsessing over the wrong man, distracting myself in any way I could, so I wouldn't have to confront the pain inside. You're right, of course. I'll get a referral from her physician as soon as possible. He cleared his throat. I'm sorry if I got huffy with you last night. You didn't deserve it. No problem. I'm just glad I was there and you were able to do something about it. After setting a time to meet the following Saturday, we hung up. I continued to sit there for a long time, staring at my now cold toast and lukewarm juice. For all the doom and gloom in our phone conversation, I felt somehow lifted. As I mentally replayed my own words, the morning sun shone more brightly through the mini blinds. Almost as though I'd begun healing from a long, strange illness. Saturday took forever to arrive, especially since Vic didn't call all week. I kept telling myself he had important issues to deal with and not to take it personally. Nevertheless, when I drove into the high school parking lot, butterflies took flight in my stomach. At first, I chastised myself, and then I lightened up. The old butterflies were the sign of anxiety in a foolish young girl. These were different. They didn't flit about, causing havoc to my nerves. They danced pirouettes of joy and excitement in anticipation of a possible future with the man I'd never fallen out of love with. A check in the rearview mirror confirmed that my grin reached from ear to ear. As soon as Vic whipped into the space next to mine and stepped from the truck, I knew he felt it too. In fact, he leaned through my open window and kissed my forehead. Thanks for letting me vent the other day. You were a lifesaver. Flustered, I stumbled my way out of the car. The counseling? Twice this week, and I went too. It's only a start, I know, but even in those two sessions, Nora revealed a side I didn't know about. The one who blames herself for her mother's disappearing act. I nodded somberly. Children often blame themselves for their parents' actions. Hadn't I done the same thing? Anyway, he said, leading me to the bed of the truck, I have you to thank, and I'm extremely grateful. We worked companionably after that, setting up the goldfish bowls, filling them with water, then transporting 100 of the little fellows from the truck to their new homes. By the time the gates opened and kids started streaming in, we were set and ready to go. Throughout the day and into the early evening, my admiration for Vic grew by leaps and bounds. He had this uncanny way of making each child feel special, which touched my heart deeply. Needless to say, with Vic running things, we gave away very few consolation prizes. In fact, come to think of it, only adults walked off without goldfish. About an hour before closing, I heard Vic's sharp intake of breath. Is that Nora over there? She looks frantic. I peered into the direction he pointed and saw Nora perched on a 2-foot wooden stump in the asphalt, her hand shading her eyes as she scanned the crowd. Vic waved his arm in the air. Over here. The familiar booming voice rang out and her gaze shifted to us immediately, her face breaking into a relieved smile. She hopped from the post and dashed toward the booth. Dad, you'll never believe this. What, honey, are you okay? The answer came out in rapid-fire staccato. I was watching television and the news came on. It was him, Dad, the guy. Was him. Slow down, Nora, what guy? She swallowed, then took a deep breath. The one who sent me his picture. The one on the internet. Her shoulders shook with barely restraining tremors. You were right. He was some kind of pervert. Vic visibly blanched before turning several shades of red. A vein pulsed in his temple. How did they catch him? They called it a sting operation. I guess some law enforcement officers set him up to think. Don't, I said. Don't think about it. Nothing happened. Nora looked at me as though seeing me for the first time. You knew about this? She turned accusatory eyes on her father. How could you tell a stranger something so private? I wanted a woman's advice, honey. Your dear old dad doesn't always have the answers. Clarice suggested the therapy appointments. Oh, she regarded me with new respect. Thanks, I guess. I smiled and chose my words carefully. It's not easy being a teenage girl. Trust me. I remember only too well. The stiffness in her body relaxed, and she shifted her gaze from me to her father. Comprehension dawned. Wait a minute. Have you guys hooked up or something? Startled, I darted a glance at Vic. What exactly did she mean by hooked up, I wondered. He gave me a lazy grin and slung an arm around my shoulder. If by hooked up you mean reconnected, I think the answer is yes. Seemingly unconcerned, she smiled back. Great. Well, I'm meeting Missy over at the Ferris wheel. See you both later. We watched the figure of an uncomplicated teen thread her way through the throng of carnival goers until we couldn't see her anymore. She's going to be okay, Vic said, a husky note in his voice. What about her dad? Is he going to be okay too? His arm around me tightened. I'll know better toward the end of the night. Check with me later. Cleanup duties took my mind off the promise in Vic's words, although my heart kept reintroducing the topic at odd intervals. The end of the night, check with me later. I wanted to sing aloud. Instead, I wiped out empty fishbowls and loaded them in boxes. At last, we'd put the booth away, and Vic took my hand. Come on, where are we going? You'll see. Talk about a walk down memory lane, far from the baseball diamond which had housed the carnival, far from the din of grandmas and grandpas, parents and kids, far from the squeaks and groans of exciting thrill rides. There was only eerie silence as he guided me along the path of days gone by, past my old locker, past the home ec room where I'd burned my first meatloaf, past we stood in front of Vic's office. He took out a key and opened the door. You're not afraid, are you? Afraid of what? Confronting your demons. Two therapy sessions and he thinks he's Dr. Phil. I hung back, uncertain. I don't know. He took my hand again, pushed open the door, and drew me inside. Before the ghosts could crowd around and suck me back to the past, he enveloped me in his arms, holding me in the present. I started to speak, but he put a finger to my lips. That day in this very office, you bore your soul to me. You opened your heart and offered every ounce of love you had to give. And you know what? He grimaced. His grip on me tightened. I had to do the right thing. I had to keep my mouth shut and rein in my feelings. Do you have any idea what that did to me? He dropped a kiss on the tip of my nose. No, you never did, but you will now. This time, his lips met mine, and we melted into each other, completing the arc of the circle I began that day so long ago. When we drew apart, he leaned away and searched my eyes. Even then, I knew I loved you, but I couldn't do anything about it. You were a student, too young. I was engaged. I thought I'd get over you, so I went ahead with my marriage. I finally found my voice. I've been looking for you in every man I've ever met, I said, the words catching in my throat. No one ever measured up. His fingers traced a lazy pattern over my back, and I shivered. We married 6 months later, attended by Nora and matchmaking Talia. On our living room table sits the leaded crystal bowl Talia gave us as a wedding gift. Our pet goldfish, Teach and Coed, spend their days swimming together in ecstasy. Okay, that's the end of that story. If you tuned in late, this is the Romance Program with volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got just a short feature I'm going to read that's from True Romance Magazine. It's called Happily Ever After. This was written by Loy Michael Cerf. Here's the story. Mom liked to joke that she had married my father for his money. Dad claimed he'd always wanted an instant family. And though they had known each other socially for many years, I believe it is safe to say that my parents did not marry for great love and passion. Theirs was a union of convenience. Sadly, they had both lost their loved ones of their lives while they were very young. Dad was 33 when his first wife died in a freak accident. Mom was only in her late 20s when her not yet 30-year-old husband suffered a rare but fatal heart disease. Although they were both heartbroken by their losses, my mother's widowhood seemed more poignant. While my father had no children, Mom had been left alone with three young boys to raise. Unfortunately, they had no insurance, so Mom had to move back home in with her own mother. Despite working two jobs, Mom struggled to support them all. It was tough going. No matter how many hours she put in, there was never enough money to go around. My father, on the other hand, was pretty well off. Since he'd been too old to serve in World War II, he held a wonderful job with General Motors. The war-related housing shortage had forced him to live with his mother as well. With no wife and kids, Dad had little to spend his money on. During those war times, he couldn't even buy a new car. Mom was proud and stubborn. When Dad found out the boys needed shoes, he offered to take them shopping and get them some clothes, but Mom refused. However, she was not above accepting tips for her waitressing services. Dad began eating all of his meals at the restaurants where she was working. He was a generous tipper. Once the new post-war cars were available, Dad bought himself a top-of-the-line Chevy. Naturally, he didn't want to drive it alone. Sunday was Mom's only day off, so Dad packed her and her boys up to travel the country roads in search of the best picnic places. He taught the boys about baseball while Mom took naps under the shade of the country trees. Family love has it that it was actually my youngest brother's idea that Mom and Dad get married. They were coming home from one of their many outings when my then 5-year-old brother announced that they were just like a regular family. They all got along. They all had fun. Dad had money and Mom had kids. Apparently, it struck my father as being logical, too. He stopped the car and went around to the passenger's side and opened the door, kneeling in the gravel beside the pavement. Dad took Mom's hand and proposed. 2 months later, they were married at the city courthouse. For the next 23 years, they shared their lives, raised the kids, and enjoyed a bunch of grandbabies. And maybe they did experience some passion. After all, they managed to have me together. Okay, so I still have a couple minutes left, so I'm going to finish this romance show with a poem. This one is from True Romance Magazine, written by Valerie L. Adam, called Passionate Men. Here's the poem. I'm tired of easygoing men, sick of complacency, weary of those laid-back guys who simply suffer me. Give me a storming man who hurts as hard as I, glances at me piercingly, and heaves a needful sigh. Give me a man who chases me, pursues me without pause, makes of me his holy grail, his sacred rebel cause. He knows what he wants. He does not play at silly mind games to drive me well away. Give me a passionate man. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. As always, thank you so much for listening to my stories. I've enjoyed reading to you. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Have a great week and take care. Bye-bye.